Kia ora. This program is brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard.
Welcome to the Black House, 106.1 FM, Wellington Access Radio. Wellington Access Radio. You're in the studio today with Eddie and Tete.
Yo.
Yo, how you doing, man?
Yo, I'm chilling, man. Blessed, black, and highly favored. Can we curse on high? I always
say
I bet. Yeah, I'm excited to get into it about this film, man. I don't know if we'll definitely won't have enough time, but...
Yeah, I was going to say, this week, I feel like... I kind of mentioned it in our last show with Craig, but I said we're talking about sinners today, and I kind of was like, my last show I was like, if you haven't seen that movie, go watch that movie.
Go watch.
And you've seen it, but we saw that movie three weeks ago.
2 weeks ago, right?
How many times have you seen it since?
Bro, since the time we saw it, I think I saw it three more times. Yeah, so I've seen it for a total of five. Might be going on my sixth this week. I wouldn't be surprised. I have to, bro. It's on principle. It's just too good.
I'm just curious, because I don't think I've ever... I think the only movie I've seen twice in the movies is Captain America Brave New World. Mm. And that was kind of... Mostly because I had one mate who wanted to go, and then another mate who was like, oh yeah, I'm kind of going to see it. And I was like, I suppose I'll go see it again.
Yeah.
Because the man I hadn't seen in a while. How do you watch, like... a movie over and over again in such quick succession for me. Like, I just kind of...
That's a great question, you know, because I've only ever done this one other time, and it was with Kick-Ass.
Mm.
And that was because at the time, you're a comic book head too, so, you know, I was like, oh man, this is something original, given that all the superhero movies were popping up at the time, and at least they kind of didn't go DC or MCU. But it felt different. It felt different for so many reasons, which we'll get into, given that it was related to, but... and interconnected with Black history, our experiences, past, present, and potentially future. Mm-hmm. There was so much to pick up every time that we went, or every time that I went to see it.
Yeah.
From the music, to the characters, to just the subtleties of how they move, to the performances of hometown hero Michael B. Jordan. Shout out Brick City, Newark, New Jersey. And just how impressive everything was, and how in sync all of the cast members seemed to be with the messages that they were trying to get across. Mm. So yeah, it felt like a different experience every time in some way.
It's one of those ones, because I feel like, I think I've just kind of, I want to go see it again. I think I will try and go see it one more time, just because I'm just like,
let me know.
Because I was talking to one of my coworkers, and she went to go see it probably two nights ago. And then I was talking to her, she went and saw it on Wednesday night, because I wasn't working on Thursday. So I went talking to her on Wednesday, she's like, I saw her booking in the ticket, sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And then yesterday I was talking to her, I was like, hey, well, how was Sinners? And she was just like, yo. And she's like, and again, there was just the stuff like, and it's all, yeah, like she did, I kind of like, there were things that pardon me, had picked up on, and I was like, oh, what did you think about this? And she's like, oh, I didn't even notice that bit. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go back and, she's like, I might have to go watch it again. Like, I might have to go watch it again just to, like, see those things and, like, I guess read a bit, like, you know, do some of, like, see, look at what people are talking about online, like, to look at, like, the historical context stuff that I didn't necessarily pick up on that I missed. Like, I want to go back and then be like, rewatch it with that sort of lens on it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Nah, I couldn't agree more. As you said that, one of the things that pops to mind, just to jump into it, it was like the symbolism of something as subtle as the birds. More specifically, I think they were vultures, or were they hawks? If they were
vultures,
they were vultures, right? It made even more sense. The fact that they arrived at different periods, but they always seem to follow death, as is the mythos around them. Like, they either know when death is present, because they're vultures, they usually eat off the carcasses, or in the case of how we saw in the film, they were kind of ahead, like following Remick. And
yeah,
when the two brothers were driving in the cotton field early on, we see two of them, I think, in the distance. And then by the time we see Remick being chased by the Choctaw, we see three of them over the house.
Because I noticed the three. Like, I did notice the three vultures, but I didn't notice them kind of building up to it. Like,
yeah, it was crazy. And what was even wilder is it was only on the last watch. Yeah, the last watch that I realized that the last time you see them isn't even when you see Remick, which is what I caught the first four times, but you see them actually over the barn that the juke joint is in. I didn't really catch that. I was like, and I can't even remember. I think it was before Remick and the other two vampires arrived too. So it was just like, they knew one way or another death was coming.
Yeah.
And that's analogous or parallel to, as we know, one way or another, some of those people were going to be murdered in the morning, either from the clan or they were going to be murdered that night, as many of them did by the vampires.
And this will be a spoiler-filled episode.
I forgot to say it.
This is going to be a spoiler-filled episode.
Almost
like
a month.
Yeah, this movie's been out for a while. Like,
go and watch it if you haven't already. And if you haven't, well, it's a break. But
I'm just trying to think. Like, I feel like the one that I feel like a lot of my friends who haven't picked up on is the white side and the black side of the street.
Yeah,
that's the one I keep telling people. My girlfriend went to see it. I mean, went to see it the other day, and she was like, and I was like, did you click that when the daughter Lisa goes and crosses the street between the two stores? There's like there's the white store and the black store, and there's the clear different sides of the street,
literally on opposite sides of the street. Yeah, it was so well done too. Because in that way, obviously, race and the racial caste systems that we dealt with, Jim Crow, is inextricably linked. However, it wasn't just about that, which is why I enjoyed it so much. So even how seamlessly that happened, and then representing, obviously, the Chinese community in Delta, Mississippi at that time, because in that particular area, and just the demographic makeup of the U.S., it was pretty much black people, white people, indigenous Americans, and a couple of pockets of individuals, including Chinese groups at that time, who I believe prior to that were brought over during the Gold Rush, or a lot of people came over during the Gold Rush, if I'm not mistaken. And they've been there over a century now, plus.
Yeah, because that's one of those ones, like, I know that same thing happened with New Zealand, like, it was like where the Gold Rush kind of wraps up in California and the West Coast, and then kind of start, and then right around the same time that the New Zealand Gold Rush kind of blows up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those ones where, like, you know, coming from the South Island, we'd like Queenstown, like Arrowtown, all through that, all through there is all the gold mining sort of space. And you see like that there is that kind of Chinese presence that, or like there's always little landmarks or little grave sites, like where it's like, and it's very often it's like, and again, it's that sort of weird thing of like how much of it is just like kind of, not urban legend, but some of it is just like, cool, like that's a Chinese miner's grave there. Yeah. That was all there's. Arrowtown, I think, has like, where like, and again, like, obviously there's pretty horrific treatment of the Chinese in New Zealand during that sort of period. But then it's interesting because talking to Leah about it, because that's, I think, from memory, that's like when you had the first kind of one of those early populations of black migrants coming in as well, like following the Gold Rush as well. And I think I don't know, it's cool to kind of like see that sort of connection, and then obviously have something that digs into, and I think it's interesting, like I feel like obviously there's always this kind of like there's different racial politics, and obviously there are that sort of thing around, especially like black communities and Chinese communities or Asian communities, sort of thing. And I think this film did very well at kind of like handling that and navigating that. I feel like the online discourse has not done very well, but that's just online.
it is just online, and I think even with online, depending on there's always louder voices, which is kind of speaking into the ether to, I guess, carry on with the flow or the vibe of the moment. So just, you know, clickbait type stuff. However, there's been a few where people really, I guess, dig into the nitty gritty of the racial politics, as you said, because what we saw in that film was, of course, there was connection and allyship. However, there was also the very real situations at play, where that scene where I think, I can't remember Lisa's mom.
Grace,
thank you. Yeah. Well, Grace wants to leave, as she rightfully should. Her children's in danger, etc. And that in and of itself, when she's speaking to her husband, She's like, yo, that this man just lost his brother. And she's like, yeah, we came here for Juju, and we didn't come here for this. And even that metaphorically playing into the, well, there is allyship and there's times for it. However, how long do certain people stick around when they're able to, for lack of a better word, take advantage of? And I use that again because I'm missing a term at the moment, but they were able to sell to black communities who couldn't get distribution for certain supplies at that time, and then also sell to white communities, and literally, again, told that line between being on both sides of the street. So it was like, well, are they going to show up? And this is more broadly speaking, like, who's going to show up when shit hits the fan versus when there's an opportunity to be had?
And I think that was, and I guess, I think that's kind of the way I've kind of seen it described, is that, like, you know, that the scene, the, where the spirits of the past and the future being some sort of thing. And obviously the kind of idea is that, like, you do see, like the dragon dancers and the lion dancers. And, stuff like, and it's that sort of thing of being like, obviously, like, in the, in that space and allyship and in that community space enough that, like, the magic that kind of Sammy weaves summons, you know, includes them their ancestry within that sort of space. But obviously then, like you said, that kind of moment where it's like, who's gonna be like, okay, who's leaving first?
And that's a perfect segue in, as far as that ancestral dance, because as you know, that was my favorite scene. I mean, I think first two, three times it brought me to tears quite easily, because that's the lens of which I walk around in this world and see our people, diaspora and all. For those who haven't seen it yet, definitely go see it, because in that scene, what you see is this physical representation of how we've always metaphorically and inherently described music to be, and that it carries our souls and connects us with our ancestors. So the only real difference between, I don't know, whether it's hip hop or call it rock and roll, it might be a slight composition change, but it's still from the same place.
Yeah.
And it blurs that boundaries of time and space. So when we saw that, and we saw the ancestors of the past as well as those of the future in that same room with him and with them, it was just, it was everything, man. It was everything. And actually, the question I have for you, because I was thinking about this too, is the way, how, and if at all, did that impact or influence your view on community?
Ooh. Damn. I might have to think on that momentarily.
Yeah, no, good.
Should we play the music from that scene?
That's the one I was open to, All
right, let's get into that, and I will try to have an answer for you when we get into that.
Yeah, no, good, bro. I'm with it.
Oh,
We are Black on the Black, back on the Black House 106.1 FM. I think, I don't know, the thing I was thinking there, the thing that was went to my head just as I was listening to that is, and I can't remember, again, that's why I want to go see it, because I want to re-double check it, but I think it's interesting because I feel like the way that kind of, at least from this version of it, phrase, is it almost flows into the future first. I don't know, just thinking of that, it's like, because it goes through, like, obviously, like, the rock influence, the hip-hop influence, like, and the different types of hip-hop influence, that sort of thing, and then it kind of goes deeper into, like, the African and the ancestral sort of things. And I think, I think it's interesting, like, I guess that sort of thing people talking about when it comes to like, the blues as well, like the blues is one of the, is probably the foundation of Western music.
Yeah.
Like,
sure.
Realistically, like, is probably the foundation of Western music. And I think it's interesting to see that sort of thing of being like pulling from the future, pulling from the future first, and I guess then being like, I guess showing how foundational it is to like the music we listen to, our music today. Like, what we listen, and then kind of being like, but then obviously then the kind of ancestral root kind of flows is the undercurrent that underpins even the blues sort of thing.
Yeah. I think you said it perfectly. And I didn't even catch that it was the future first, which is really interesting and in some ways comforting, because I was visualizing that scene as we're listening to the music, that it's inseparable to me now. And the last line before that guitar kind of riff comes in from the future, and then before it leads into the hip hop and G funk, things like that, that he says is like, somebody take me in your arms tonight. And again, like, just prior to that, Delroy Lindo's character Slim is talking about how this, we brought this here, it wasn't forced on us. It's sort of like we carry that with us everywhere.
Yeah.
And that, I think in all indigenous cultures, especially African cultures, being the foundation of the birthplace of humanity, it's like the ways in which we are always carrying our ancestors and our traditions, our dances, our stories, which we can definitely bounce off of that, our stories with us, because of how integral stories were and are to the narrative of this film, but also who we are and how we relate to one another. Like, what are the stories that are told, be they through song, but through sound, you know, whether it's human speech, you know, what's the difference between speech and a rap, you know, what's the difference between that and singing? It's just changes of your vocal cords, but they're all sound. It's sound that we carry, and vibrations that we carry with us, and that, like you said, that undercurrent thread, if you will, is our ancestors, is what's the beginning, middle, and end of everything.
And I think there's something interesting in the sense of like, like, I feel like sometimes it's that kind of conversation that comes up where I feel like, you know, I feel sometimes there's that kind of pigeonholing of like what black music is, for example. And I think bringing it back to the blues and then obviously then bringing in the African undercurrent as well. But obviously in through that scene, like, you know, the first point of the future bit is the obviously when like the kind of like Bootsy Collins style motherfucker comes through, so like, good,
bro.
And then like you see the electric guitar, and then it's that sort of thing of like, you know, here are the black foundations and like rock and like, and obviously funk, like funk, like Parliament funk and like funk and that sort of thing. And then there's bits, obviously we recognize the hip hop aspect, but then obviously there's like the bit in there where like there's the ballerina comes through and that sort of thing. And it just kind of speaks to that sort of like, it's almost like that kind of like, here's how, you know, it kind of splits that pigeonholing sort of out. Like, and it's that sort of thing. Like sometimes, like I feel like there was lots of ways in which like, I don't know, because like, for me, like, I'm a big punk fan, for example. And then, like, I feel like I got into punk through the bands that my mum liked, like The Clash and that sort of thing. And I think punk has always been a space, like, often in its best forms has been a space that has worked very much in collaboration with black people.
For sure.
But then also, like, you go to, like, things like Bad Brains and, like, and punk and metal and, like, the foundational thing, role that, like, Bad Brains is. That's someone who I have very, very little interest in metal, suddenly finding the Bad Brains and, like, the reggae connection that floated through that. And I think it's interesting just having that kind of experience of, you know, like I said, like, using blues as that kind of, like, thread to then be, like, cool, like all, and not, and I feel like, because we so always see, I always feel like I always see that kind of like, you know, blues is black music, drum and bass is black music, house is black music, sort of thing. Yeah. And I think, I think that scene to me felt like it brought home that message
really well.
in a way that I think better than just, like, I feel like just kind of that stating, that statement of it. And that kind of then, and I think then bringing it back and, like, using it as that kind of, and then using it to kind of as that African connection back as well, kind of like, oh no.
I hear you. Yeah, it was inspiring and overwhelming. Yeah, it left me, and I was looking at just different emotions in my trusty feelings wheel, which I'll ask you a question in relation to that too, probably towards the end. I was just trying to narrow down like three of the main things I thought I felt. And I think that scene in the movie as a whole made me feel a lot. However, in awe was a big one, like just astonishment. Like astonishment at what I was seeing, however, also how it made me feel about myself. Like looking into that scene and looking at those depictions and seeing ourselves reflected in like such a multifaceted way. You know, it's almost like you're looking at a mirror and you know, those mirrors kind of like a funhouse where it splits in like multiple pieces. However, those pieces still make up the whole of the image.
Yeah.
It was like that. And that's exactly what it felt like in that moment. And yeah, it just made me feel incredibly proud and
yeah,
of who we are as a people, who we always have been, and also what we will continue to become, you know?
I think for me, it's one of those ones, where, and that's why I think I like, pardon me, listening to that from the soundtrack sort of thing, because like in the movie, like there's, again, it's so much to take in and absorb, but like, I feel like the actual vibe of that music, I just really just want to close my eyes and just kind of like take it and just literally just like construct that image or that soundscape in my head. Right. And I feel like there's something, and again, like the film is like, then obviously it has the visual aspect on top of it. And I just remember feeling like that's, you know, as someone who, and I feel like we've had conversations about this before, as someone who probably is often set in towards the more agnostic end when it comes to spirituality, that's one of those things, like, I feel like the last couple of months has been the space for me where, like, I've been thinking about my spirituality and, like, how I connect to that and feeling like there's something that I do want to connect to. And that scene is one of those moments where I was just like, okay, like, I could just feel like it was beyond just, like you said, awe is, like, the right feeling of it. It's beyond just, it's beyond, I don't know, it's beyond just like, oh, this, that was cool, that was a dope scene, but like, it was like, I could feel that.
Feel
like,
yeah, it's almost like strands of your DNA were just like jumping and dancing just as much as you were seeing in that scene, you know? And to your point, I guess this is someone that has floated on different ends of the spectrum when it comes to, I guess, spirituality, but now is very much interconnected and actively like searching more into my pre-colonial spiritual practices, such as Wudong, which we spoke about, which is practiced in my Ewe tribe prior to Christianity coming to West Africa. It's this, how do I describe it? I watched that film and it reminded me and made me feel like I was on the right path and that the right path was always going to be there, and I was always going to be guided onto it by our ancestors because they truly live within us. You know, whether it's, I don't know, a freckle that we see on our arm or a way that we do a particular thing, or, you know, there was thousands and hundreds of thousands of people that predated how we got to be exactly in that moment in that theater. And it was hard to sit there and not feel as though the theater was also filled up with those individuals just as much as it was us, you know.
Yo, that's such a good way to describe it. But I think it's interesting because I also think like that, like also using, like, I guess also things that I've kind of been looking into, like, because again, it's reminded me of a whole bunch of stuff that like I've kind of like picked up very kind of tangentially just from like interested in music and interested in like stuff like the blues occasionally. And like, I don't know, like, cause my whole thing was like, when I saw the character Sammy, I was like, and obviously the more I realized it was like a kind of vampire movie with horror, like there was a horror aspect. I was kind of like thinking like Sammy was like the kind of Robert Johnson type figure. Cause like Robert Johnson is like legendary, almost like mythical blues player.
For those who haven't heard of him, go look up Robert Johnson and the story of the Crossroads.
And the Crossroads is the really interesting thing because the whole idea behind it is that he, you know, made a bargain with the devil,
quote unquote, the devil
for the ability to play blue. And it's the sort of thing, like, you know, the story is that he was not a particularly great guitar player, and then suddenly almost overnight was an incredible guitar player. But then it's interesting, like, when, and they always, people always come back to that thing around like the story of the devil and the crossroads. Mm-hmm. But then it's one of those ones where like, and I think that's kind of one of the undercurrents in Sinners as well, is obviously grappling with like, I don't think it's specifically even like an anti, it's, but it's grappling with the black church and spiritual sure. and how, and
for sure,
you know, pre-colonial spirituality as well. And I don't know, I was really reading that kind of narrative of Robert Johnson and the Crossroads. I'm just like, well, obviously there are still Western, there are European traditions about people making deals with the devil around music. But also, if you come to the Crossroads in African spiritualities has a very specific meaning, often tied to Papa Legba.
Talk about it.
And it's that and again, it's that sort of thing of like, you know, that's kind of almost that undercurrent is like, and again, like it does treat like it takes the blues as it was, which was considered dark music, evil music, like kind of sinner's music, right? Yeah,
much sinful like everything music. We create in the white power structures, they label evil. We can go on.
But I thought that was such a cool way of just again, like, and again, I'd maybe heard someone talk about Robert Johnson in the context of Papa Lick, but in my head, I was just like, then just it just took that to really kind of make that lightning bolt connection, just to be like, of course, like it's not. Doesn't feel like a story about the devil. It feels like a story about Papa Legba.
Exactly. Wholeheartedly, exactly. And as you say that, wearing your purple durag and everything like that, because purple, for those who don't know, is also one of the colors that's connected to Papa Legba, who's one of the, someone might correct me if you're listening to this, but one of the higher, I believe, loas in Haitian voodoo, which has its roots and connections to Voodoo from West Africa as well. And just those ancestors and those spiritual guys that we've always had being able to be beseeched in some way, shape, or form, or have us access them for a connection to overcome a particular challenge, as you said. And just those aspects of crossroads in that we all get to various crossroads in our lives. The message I took away from Robert Johnson's story and Sammy's story, not even just within the context of the horror, quote unquote, but is... What are you willing to sacrifice for in order to, whether it's overcome a certain challenge or get to wherever you're needing to go? And is that the place that you actually want to go? Like, there's always going to be a give and take. Now, that give and take may not necessarily be, I guess, polarizing as evil and good or bad type of thing. However, it's not without some kind of transference of energy is how I see it.
Yeah.
And what then do you do when that energy, I guess, lingers with you? So to take it back to Sammy, one of the things that I've been discussing with people when talking about how he didn't get, you know, put the guitar away, he actually had it remade and all of that. And, you know, in those final scenes, we see Stack come and speak to him and say, "You still got the reel in you, right?" And he has it and he brings it. And someone said, "Oh, I can't imagine why he wouldn't have let that go." And I said, "Well, yeah, remember, that's his way of connecting with the ancestors. And he just watched some of the people closest to him in his town get murdered and all in one night. And he describes feeling paralyzed at least once a week for that. However, before that night happened, he said that was the best day of his life. So in that same way, just holding together those two seemingly opposing or contrasting ideas, it's like you can have the best day of your life and the worst day of your life in the same 24 hours, you know. And you can have choices that you're going to make one way or another that have outcomes which you then retrospectively might look at and go, oh man, that was the wrong choice. However, was it? When you look at it in totality, was it? And banging that full circle, how that impacts our decision making, but how we choose to connect as well with our ancestors or each other.
That night before everything.
Yeah.
And what's the stat says? Like, that was the last time I felt free.
That was the last time I felt, he said, for those few hours, we was free. He said, that was the last time I saw the sun, last time I saw my brother, and for a few hours, we were free. Those three points, I was like, Jesus Christ. I don't know if we gotta go commercial break, but
let's play last time I seen the sun.
There you go.
As I open up my eyes, something just feels right. 'cause I can see the dawning. It's not so far away. And all my life I've been waiting for a day like this.
So I'll live like it's the last time. Long time at the wrong time. When's the right time? Is it my time? And if I'm dreaming, then please.
Things that I find
really
in a way
which got me in tears again. Fuck.
Do you know what's one of the things, like, usually, like, when we have the show and we have music breaks, like, usually whoever's in the studio, we always chatting, like, kind of like either really stuff that's coming up or just like random shit that we're talking about. And I think this is the first time, like, both times we have music breaks, it's one of those things we literally just sit in there, just literally in silence, just listening to this.
Yeah, man.
But it's like one of those things that I feel we kind of touched on a little bit with obviously the Chocolate Toy and obviously the Vultures scene and obviously talking about the Chinese influence. The thing I found really, really interesting was Rimmick and the kind of Irish vampire sort of thing, because I think in terms of like the vampire aspect, like I really like, it's one of the things where I find it really hard pressed to call Rimmick a villain.
It's
weird one, and it's that sort of thing of like and like the whole aspect with him, and again, I think they kind of, and I think that's what I like, is that it kind of draws these kind of parallels. Obviously, there's the Chocolate Tour, and then there's the Chinese, and then there's obviously Remick's kind of thread is like, here is the colonization of the Irish by the English, and then here's someone who, because I'm not entirely sure if it's kind of comes up in the film, but there's more the theories that are saying that he's possibly like, he talks about the Lord's Prayer, and he talks about, I remember when they bought that
when
to my father's
stole
land.
My father's land had those words on their lips,
And someone's like, again, that could be in a metaphorical sense, but also he's a vampire, so he literally could be thousands of years old.
So someone dated him, just to interject briefly, and they said based on the timeline, he would have been between 1,200 and 1,300 years old.
Yo. Yeah. So
that's insane. Like,
and it's, and I find that interesting, because then the idea being is that, like, and I guess it's that sort of, like, that's almost the untouched part of vampire mythology. Because I think they did quite well in terms of, like, how they adapted vampire mythology. Like, they're not impacted by holy symbols as much. Like, the cross and that sort of doesn't impact them. But that it's, like, garlic, silver, stake through the heart. But obviously, one of those bits, and I think they kind of didn't touch on it, but I think it works with the idea of, like, Remick being an Irishman through the process of colonization, cut off from his ancestors. You know, one of those kind of things that comes up in vampire mythologies is often the idea of, like, vampires can't cross running water.
Yeah.
So the idea that he And his whole kind of goal in seeking out Sammy and, like, you know, realizing that someone has that magic, that ability to kind of summon the ancestors, yeah. the ancestors, including yeah. his ancestors.
Including his, yeah.
It's almost a sort of thing. I think for me, the implication that I kind of took from that is also as a vampire in America, as an Irishman in America, he is disconnected he can't cross the water.
Yep.
He can't cross the water back to one. He can't yep. connect back to his ancestors. So yeah. sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you hit the nail right on the head. And it was, that brought up so many different things to me. It was so, so powerful because it circles back to the importance of what community is and that this man who was effectively, you know, 1300 years old was still seeking community because of how alone he felt. I mean, that dancing scene where he's Irish step dancing and they were singing the Rocky Road to Dublin, which I looked into, and then the lyrics, I think the time when it was created, the lyrics of themselves speaks about a man going to a town for a better life during, I believe, the English's colonization of Ireland to a town which still has a lot of trouble, but it's the whole the devil you know concept, yeah. which we hear the twins talk about in the beginning. But when he's doing that and he's surrounded by all the people who he's turned at that point, it really dawned on me in that moment how I don't know, I felt a lot of empathy for him. I was really sad for him because they're all connected. So you hear Stack say and other people, we can see his thoughts and we see his memories. However, those are his memories. So they're rooted to him, but he's not rooted to anyone else in that circle, which is why, like, you see him at the end. He's just, like, looking up. It's almost like he's looking to be connected again to those ancestors. But this is the most he can do. And so he's trying to create that family. He even goes so far as to say, yeah, once you guys let us in, when he's, you know, trying to get the others who are still human to let him in and things, then we'll go kill those clan people together. Let's go create a new society for each other. Yeah, and it's interesting that that's still within the context of these people that he's turning and who souls he's trapping, because his soul is also trapped. They're trying to build that, and he's saying, "Yo, they won't let you." Doesn't that frustrate you? Doesn't that anger you? You're not really free. Going back to that aspect of freedom, and bring up the question I actually wanted to ask you and have both of us kind of not try to tackle, but think on in the context of this film as well, is what's freedom? And when do you feel it?
Damn. I might have to come again. One that I feel like I want to circle back to before we close out, because I feel like it's one. You hit me with this. Fantastic. Good. I feel like it's things I hadn't, perspectives I hadn't thought about. I guess. I don't know. It's a weird, I can't necessarily describe it as a specific state. Like, it's really hard to describe what it would look like, but there's almost that kind of like, and it's weird because I think it comes down to music for me sometimes. It's just that feeling of like, sometimes of just the way something sounds is kind of lift, that just, you can just feel the kind of like, space, but not internally, not in the sense of like, you know, like emptiness, but in terms of just like you can breathe,
you can take
that breath in, and like you just feel like something, it feels like it starts from the stomach and it kind of rises, and it's just this kind of rising feeling of just kind of space, but kind of, I don't know.
I like what you mentioned about space, because it feels that way to me too when I believe I'm experiencing it. And for me, similar to you, music's always been kind of that conduit. It's the reason why when I like a song a lot, like this soundtrack, I just have to keep listening to it, because it feels like it's either the closest I can get or the things that puts me in that state. And I'm just trying to, whether it's chase it or just embrace it as fully as we can. Because when I was having a discussion with a few of the other bros the other day, when we saw it on my fifth watch, I said to them something I hadn't really said much out loud to many people, and that's that I don't know if I believe that freedom can exist in this state, in this being, and in what we are in the flesh. And maybe that's a very spiritualistic way of looking at it. However, I do feel like we tap into aspects of freedom, and maybe it's not something that's just infinite. I don't know. I'm talking a bit out loud here, but it's just still wrestling with that as well, and wondering what what am I chasing if not freedom?
Because like, the way you kind of describe it as well, because it's that sort of thing of like, it kind of takes it as like a here is like a like an a constant state.
Yeah.
And it's that sort of thing of like, and I think there's, because I think there's still like something interesting you can have around that sort of thing, like you suddenly come down to like, the choices we make and the paths that we follow and the choices, the, how we kind of go and move along those paths, right? Yeah. It's sort of thing, it's almost like freedom in a sense, it's like, it's not a constant. It's just a thing, like, but it's something that you, there'll be moments, and they might be longer periods of time. There might be just fleeting, tiny moments. Like, again, like the film kind of very much frames it as like, here is this kind of fleeting sliver of time, just a few hours of that feel free.
Mm.
And I think it's interesting because they don't necessarily even make it, like, the music is obviously part of that. We see that aspect of it, but I feel like when Sammy talks about that, there's the montages of like, you know, when it's like Delta Slim and Stack and Cornbread and him driving, and then it's the sort of thing, it's like when they're all doing like the food, all the preparation for that night, it's like, it's not just like the party, it's not just the celebration, the event, it's the, like you said, it's the, doing, it's the demo, it's, and I sit there and go, I almost sit there and go, when it comes like you're talking about like the choices we make in terms of freedom, it's like, there's probably ways in which chasing that freedom is obviously something that we, you know, there are like, from like a, if you want to bring it, boil it down to like, I guess like a, not political, but like a kind of like social, like the society we live in sort of thing. Yeah. There's freedom that we should 100% fight for and push for.
Yeah.
But there's also freedoms where it's like, if you chase freedom like that, and there's other ways that if you chase freedom, do you just never ever quite achieve it? It's one of the things that just stays quite just out of your grasp because you're trying to chase something that should just kind of be fleeting, should just kind of be, and again, like, should be like a momentary thing. That's something that you kind of, and if you, if people were comfortable in that way, in the sense of like, and this isn't like an, like not any, except society has it as sort of thing, but in the sense of like, at a, I don't want to say like a macro level, like an economist, but like, but a macro level, that freedom of like, if we stop trying to chase freedom in that perspective and just let it kind of, those moments and those spaces, and try and set up the things that the set up space, those kind of things that create that state just for a split second, sort of sort of thing, is that more enriching to have that perspective on freedom?
Beautifully well put. I think it's a good question. When I look at freedom in the same category as I do other emotions, separate to, as you mentioned, political freedom restrictions, and like whether it be Palestine or Congo, like things like that. Of course, we want everyone to be free, autonomy, not being persecuted, oppressed, genocided, all of those things. When I look at it as a state of being, it's something that you can feel and experience. If I see it in the same category as the other emotions, then to your point, yeah, it's inherently not going to be constant. And I don't know if it's partially my unwillingness to want it to be that, or the fact that a part of me has accepted that, that makes me both appreciative of the states that I can't control, at least not all the time, when I experience it, as well as frustrated and sad and disappointed. It's like, and maybe that's the human nature, you know, to want something to be quote unquote forever, but there is no infinite forever.
Yeah.
In so much as our quote unquote lifetimes. So to use an example, and I was thinking about this as you were talking, when you're preparing a meal, you're getting together with a few friends or family members, whoever it is, and you're getting it together, you know, you're organizing the tables, you're putting the tablecloth down, you're getting the dishes together, and you're talking, you're laughing, you're doing all of that. And then you sit down and you eat, and you're talking some more. There are moments when I'm in those situations, I'm thinking about the end of it. And I'm thinking about the end of it because a part of me is going, man, I wish this could be every day.
Yeah.
Man, I wish this could be all the time. However, if freedom is in being in the moment, present, then I'm taking away from my ability to be free in that moment by every thought or minute that I'm focused on wanting or wishing it to be different.
The continuum,
they got that continuity. So,
and this is something like, it's that kind of, in a way, but not like a too much of a good thing sort of thing, but I feel like, in a way, and again, like a weird example, like I feel like, no matter, recently I feel like I've really gotten into like enjoying like just getting kombucha, drinking kombucha. And it's that sort of thing where like, I feel like there were points where it was like, my work day, like, you know, maybe once a week or once, used to be that maybe once every 2 weeks, once a month sort of thing. I just literally just, there's a dairy or like a kind of corner store down by my building at work. I just go down there and order a bottle of kombucha, get a bottle of kombucha sort of thing, and then just have that at my desk sort of thing. And then, but I noticed that like, because I enjoy it, I start doing it more.
So doing it more.
And it's that sort of thing. And then I'm just like, okay, now I'm sitting there being like, I kind of feel like I want to stop because now it's become a comforting thing. It's become a comforting thing, but it's like, there's that kind of appreciation that I had that was that kind of like, that specific, you know, that specific, that, specialness that kind of came from just like having that kind of fleeting, that just, you know, once in a while sort of thing. And I feel it's that kind of same, in a weird way, it's really, and it's different because it's like, obviously, like I said, there's that kind of process of like, you like that, that's a state you've created, a community state you've created. But I think it's that sort of, it kind of comes down to, is the kind of, the fact that it is finite and not necessarily regular or super constant, the thing that then makes you appreciative of it.
Yeah.
And I guess when you say people talking about those kind of pathways people go down, it's the people who do try and extend that, to extend that state, and don't, aren't happy to content to let it just be. And again, I think, like you said, it's a difficult thing to do. Like, I don't think anybody is ever going to be like, be entirely content that that night ends. But it's like, it's, I guess it's that acceptance that it does versus, you know, people who would go out of the way to try and like create that and continually create that vibe and continually create that vibe without, and then it's the same thing. It's just never going to quite feel the same. And like, I think that's what you said. That's almost like, in my mind, like how you chasing freedom in the wrong way almost. Like,
Yeah. And I think that's also what we see in the use of vampirism as a metaphor for that, because you have that, those souls who are trapped here on this earth, in this case, between the twins, just use them as examples, Stack, who became a vampire, Smoke, who did not, and Smoke, who's able to rejoin the ancestors and connect, you know, he went to rejoin his baby, rejoin Annie, all of those things. And while Stack is sort of stuck.
And it's almost the kind of vibe of it, and it's that sort of thing of like how Remick kind of pictured it to people. It's like you can break free of Jim Crow, like you break free of Jim Crow,
you leave one cage,
you would no longer be bound by this. But also I think there's the degree of, and I think the vibe that, you know, like I assume Stack and Mary had a fucking great time from the 30s through sort of thing,
60
like,
years
but like you said, there's that kind of thing of like, but obviously then like, there's just always that experience that is going to be off limits. There's always that kind of one aspect of it that is going to be off limits. And I think that's interesting for Sammy, like, and again, like you said, like Sammy talking about like that couple of hours where I felt free, but like I still wake up paralyzed by that stuff. And then being offered the opportunity to just be, like to have a constant state of something that is good, like broadly good. But... well, that would allow him to continue living, but he's like, no, I don't want that. Like, I feel like, and I think recognizing that, like, that constant state, that just that enduring eternal state just isn't.
It's not for you.
It's not the kind of what he wants.
So and because to your point, it comes with its own cost. Like,
and it's a sort of thing, like, I assume Stack and Mary were happy, but there's that sort of thing of like, there's just those things that just they won't ever be able to experience again. And it's the same thing. Like, I feel like, what does that say? He said, last time I saw the sun.
Last time I saw the sun, And he offered, again, he offered to make Sammy a vampire again. And he said to him, he said, you could live your life, you could tour. But the last thing he said about that offer was, no pain. No pain. Man, that hit me like a ton of bricks. Because the allure of no pain is, I mean, shit, that's what everyone's chasing, really, right? Whether it's to try not be experience pain from someone hurting your feelings, or physical pain if you're experiencing an ailment or a challenge, or pain of your people being disenfranchised, oppressed, marginalized, whatever it is, he's just saying no pain. And he says, you know what? I think I've seen all that I've been prepared to see, or all that there is to see for me in this lifetime. I was like, wow, fuck. So then in that regard, you got, you know, you have Stack and Mary not experiencing pain, but going through life. However, I would argue that they still do in some way, shape, or form, because even in that offer, it demonstrated that he still wants to be connected to his cousin. That's his cousin. Like, that's his baby cousin. And the fact that Stack and his Smoke are two people he looked up to. They're people that they see as a young brother. Someone that, yo, I want to spend eternity with you too, cuz even though I haven't seen you in 60 years, we could, you know. And we didn't get to this. I feel like we're going to need to do a few episodes on this. But just the relationship between Stack and Smoke. As someone who's like I'm a younger brother. It's just me and my older brother. Man, Nash. You know, we're not twins. That shit broke me, bro. Like, it opened up every vulnerability I had relating to siblings, all of that. Particularly because one of the things I noticed is the two times we get to see them say, I love you, to each other is when they had to leave each other. Mm. You know, the first was in that wagon when they were going to go do two separate things. And Smoke says to him, Smoke being the older of the twins, he goes, I love you. I love you too. Be careful. And Stack says, I will. And then the last time they make that similar quote-unquote exchange, it's different. It was when Stack was dying. He's holding him in his hands. He says, she bit me. I heard what he said the last time, but I think what he said just before that was, I'm scared. And then he gargled as he was passing away, I love you. And then Smoke saying, I'm not moving from this spot. When Annie and them tried to get him the shift, he said, the best part of me was him. Mm. I was like, fuck. Because what is going back to community or siblings, whatever, when someone does pass who's close to you, you know, there is, your life changes, not just because they're not there, but because you're not experiencing those moments with them, or you're not sharing moments that you can then share with them. And it feels, at least this is how I describe it, and you've heard me describe this through talking about some of my friends who've passed recently, there's an unfairness that you feel to it. And I think that trickles back into, whether it's the metaphor of vampirism or our experiences as humans trying to shift through life, it's like just dealing with those feelings that the same breath that you can experience some of the most exciting, beautiful, freeing moments of your life, at a moment's notice, you can experience some of the most tragic, frustrating, heartbreaking ones as well.
And even, like, I know for me, like, in a weird way, like, directly relate to it, but I feel like the way I think about that is like I... In the last couple of years, I've only, like, probably the last year, it's been the first time I've been really conscious of, like, the dynamic my family had once I went to boarding school and went to uni. Because I went away to school, and then I went from high school straight to uni. Like, so when I finished uni was the first time I'd lived at home longer than 2 months. Since, at that point, probably, I was, 21? Yeah. At that point, probably a decade. And in the last year, it's been the first time I've been really started being really conscious of the relationships and dynamics that my younger siblings and my mom all have that I was never party to. That I just, like, again, just by virtue of not being there. And it's in a weird way. And it's like, obviously not the same thing as like a loss of something, but there is that sort of thing of like, it has been one of those things to try and it's, again, it's kind of only hit, I guess, as my siblings have gotten older, so then my brother's at uni, my sister's working, and so it's that sort of thing of like, now we're all old enough that like you know, that it is that weird moment of disconnection sort of thing where I'm just like, oh, like there's these things that like I wasn't there for, and I don't know, like, and then I don't know how you guys feel about it, but it's like I feel like there's something that I'm missing, and I wonder if you guys feel the same sort of thing, as these kind of things that we're missing.